Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best day Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be a mini show, an after dark. I don't know. It's one of those two.
Whatever it ends up being.
Yep. Ryan is not here. He cannot make it. He's got some work obligations or something. Who knows?
Yeah, he owes his boss a favor.
Indeed. And then
go on.
Then he had to take a really big poop.
Yeah.
In that order.
Yeah. They are related, though.
him and his boss?
And the really big poop.
Okay.
you don't want to know the details of the situation.
So, you know, we'll talk about whatever we feel like. I have been playing a few games. As you know, I have had time over the past several weeks to play a lot of games.
I've been playing a couple of things. There's something I want to get, but I can't not get my hands on it.
Is it Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah, I cannot get my hands on that thing.
Damn.
Well, I probably could if I really wanted to. I'm just trying to wait for it to get into my store so I can get a discount on it, but probably not going to happen.
Ah, that's a bummer. I was hoping you were playing that one so I could hear about it, but
When this whole thing ends, if I get my hands on it, I'll bring my whole PlayStation over for you.
Well, I'm kind of scheming here a little bit. Because, you know, there are a number of PlayStation 4 games that are getting to be pretty cheap that I'd like to try out. And, you know, a lot of it will depend on, you know, what Switch games are being released in, like, the back half of the year. But I'm kind of scheming about kind of annexing my dad's PS4, because he's got one that he never uses.
Yeah, he never touches the thing.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
If I grab, like, the Resident Evil 2 remake and, like, Horizon Zero Dawn and Final Fantasy VII, I'd be set for a long time.
Yeah, you'll like Horizon. Horizon's good.
Yeah, that game looks really cool. It came out around the same time as Breath of the Wild.
It was... Really?
Yeah, it was like...
Yeah, that's about right.
I think it was like a month or two before.
Yeah, it was around that time.
But yeah, I mean, then like Breath of the Wild kind of ate up just the general conversation. Because, you know, it's such a massive game. But from...
Which is a shame, because that game is good.
Yeah, from all accounts, like, Horizon's a really great game. So
I want to play Horizon. Golly. I lent it to my buddy, though. I don't have it right now.
So, a game that I have been playing that's, you know, not a new game anymore is Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Oh, God.
I'm getting real close to the end of my fourth run. I played through another Golden Deer run.
Really, all you have to do is another Edelgard run, and you get all the different endings.
Yeah, but I really like Golden Deer, so I wanted to do a Golden Deer run. So,
are you doing things any differently, or...?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm taking a couple of characters in a different direction. I'm trying to get different classes for Byleth as well, because, you know, when you do a New Game Plus, you can use some of your renown that you've earned as a currency to basically unlock different things. Like, you can, like, up your supports with different characters. You can, like, unlock skills with weapons from the start of the game. You can up your professor level at the very beginning, which is usually what I do. That's the first thing I go for.
Yeah, that's just the most helpful thing, really. But at the same time, by your third run through, everybody's got high enough support that you can just buy the support. There's not really a whole lot of reason for the professor level.
Well, it depends on what you're wanting to do, because, like, early on, professor level isn't all that important. Like, you don't have to max it out because there's really not that many things to do. But what I've been spending a lot of time with in the back end of the game now, because I have such a high professor level, it's been maxed out, is I've been just spending a lot of time maxing out things like Byleth skills with brawling or axes, stuff that I've never used as a character. So if I want to take Byleth down like a war master path, I could.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I haven't been using any magic with that character this time around. The two magical characters in Golden Deer, the two mage characters, are Marianne and Lasithia. Lasithia still taken to Gremory, because I looked through all like the stats, like her stat growth rates. Being a mage is really the best thing for her. Marianne I took to Holy Monk this time around, as opposed to having a second Gremory. And I don't know if I have a
Holy Monk,
not Holy Monk, sorry,
Holy Paladin.
Yeah, Holy Paladin, or Holy Knight, I think it is.
Holy Knight, yeah, something like that. The horse thing.
Yeah, a mounted unit, which, you know, if I have a chance, once I get that job maxed out, I might switch her back to Grimory just to get the more magical uses. Like having like the more uses of physics is more valuable to me than being able to be mounted.
Yeah, something was up with that, because I used one my first run. I don't think they, even as a mounted unit, it has that much mobility.
Yeah, it's basically like a cavalier. Like
you
can move a couple extra spaces, but
it's nothing fancy.
Yeah. So, actually, I've been having a lot of fun with Lysithia because I gave her an item that ups her mobility by 2, so she's not a mounted unit but can basically move like one. She just doesn't get like the extra movement chance after an action.
Hmm.
Let's see. Raphael, I took him down an armored class last time. This time I just took him to Warmaster, which in, through like a warrior and then whatever the equivalent of berserker is in this game. I can't remember. Claude still ends up as his exclusive class. Hilda, I again took to a Wyvern Lord because that's really the best thing for her. But both Lorenz and Ignaz I took on different routes because Ignaz, they kind of like push you toward a sniper or a range, a bow unit of some sort. First time around, I took him to Bow Knight. But when I was looking at his speed didn't really develop all that well. So when I was looking at his growth rates, I tried to emphasize him getting more speed and getting more luck, because he already has a high growth rate for luck. And when you take him down like a thief, assassin, pathway, it'll grow his speed and his luck a lot more. And right now he's just a crit machine. Like, I've got skills on him to, you know, to up his crit ratio with the weapons that he's using. He's using swords and bows, so you still get the range with him. And then I have, you know, you give him like the killer weapons to up his crit ratio. And there are times where, you know, I'll attack an enemy and I can expect to see a crit percentage of 60 to 80%. So he's a monster.
That's gross.
And then Lorenz, the game kind of like pushes you toward taking him down a mounted class, like Paladin to even, like a Dark Knight pathway. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Lorenz is I was looking at his growth rates again, and his speed is kind of fringy, as well as his strength. Like, he's got a decent chance, I think it was like a 35 to 40%, which is an okay chance that he'll like get a plus one when he levels up in those areas. But I wanted to, when you take someone down a mounted unit class, it actually decreases their chance of gaining more speed, which is probably why he worked out to be pretty slow last time. And since his magic and physical attack stats are kind of split, I decided to again take him down a pathway to try to emphasize his speed, and whichever, like whether he ends up being like a magical unit or a physical unit, it didn't really matter to me as long as he was able to, you know, not get hit twice every time he's engaging in combat. And he actually turned out to be a really good mortal savant.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, his both his physical and his magical attack, they're nearly identical. They're both very good. He's actually got speed. He's got dexterity. You know, his defensive stats are fine. Like, he worked out a whole lot better going down that route rather than the, like, just like the monk or the mounted unit route that the game kind of wants you to go down. So, yeah, I've been really pleased with every single character. Leonie, who is of course a boss no matter what route you take her. First time around I took her down like a paladin class, and I think she ended up as a falcon knight. This time I took her down bow knight through archer and sniper, and that's been really good. Like, she seems to be amazing no matter where you take her. But yeah,
you should do a run where you take people down the route that would be the worst possible route for them and see if you can get through the game.
That'd be interesting. I'd probably
just absolute work. Take Raphael, pure mage. Just
I'd probably cheap out and turn it onto normal mode for that. But
that's fine.
Yeah, that'd be
give,
pretty.
Give yourself a challenge. It would be nuts. It would just be a lot of your people would be mages if you did that. But you know, just try to make them complete opposites of what they're designed to be.
You imagine like Dudu as a healer.
Yep, Dudu's the healer.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a game that I've been spending probably more time than I should be spending with right now. But I'm getting near the end of this. I think I just got to a mission, or I finished the mission, and you know there was some story stuff going on, and then it immediately sent me into another mission without having any like point in the monastery. So I think I'm within the last mission or two of finishing that one off.
Yeah.
I can't remember what number it is on, because I think there's like 23 Golden Deer missions.
Yeah, something like that. Golden Deer, I think, has... It's either the Golden Deer or Blue Lion's got the most. The Black Eagle's got the least.
Is it both routes?
One of the routes. Or one of the routes is the least. I don't know about the other route. The other route's got a little bit more.
Yeah, I think like the route where you team up with Edelgard is like kind of like the default one. That's an 18 mission one. I remember that because it's the I played through that one. But then like I guess the optimal route for Black Eagle is longer. I'm not 100% sure how you achieve that one though.
I haven't played through that route. I have no idea what happens in that one.
So, what you got going on? Besides not playing Final Fantasy VII.
I got a few things going on. I made a horrible decision.
Go on.
And got back into World of Warcraft.
I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, so I'm back into that with Jeff and Mitch. We're kind of just doing... They have a new expansion supposedly coming out this year, and it looks really good. So me and the guys got back into it, and we've been messing around here and there. I made a... Just for when I'm playing by myself, I made a... You know, World of Warcraft, there's Horde and there's Alliance.
Right.
And we've always played Horde. We have Horde characters and we're for the Horde. But I never played through Alliance, so I was like, let's make an Alliance character. Because right now they have a thing in preparation for Shadowlands where they give an experience boost. So all characters have 100% experience boost. So it's really easy to level up new characters right now. So I was like, let's try this out. And so I made... The first character that I really... got into the game with was this little goblin named Clapple.
Alright.
And I named him that because it was a D&D campaign that I played where I played a little insane goblin who likes explosions, and his name was Clapple. And so I made a World of Warcraft character for him. And so I'm sitting here trying to think of a character to do, so I'm like, alright, let's play Clapple's insane half-brother, Slapple, the gnome. Yeah. And so I have this little gnome hunter who's running around with this little mechanical chicken. It's just... It's been a lot of fun.
Does the chicken do anything?
Well, yeah, it's a hunter class, so yeah, the chicken's involved with some of your techniques and stuff. And so it's really funny to see this little robotic chicken just run straight at this giant thing and just go at him. It's been very entertaining. But yeah, I've just been doing that and doing a little bit here and there. And then whenever I'm not doing WoW, I need to get away from the computer. Since I can't get my hands on Final Fantasy VII, the remake, I picked up Final Fantasy VII for my Switch.
Nice.
So I've been playing through that a little bit. I'm not very far. I'm still in the Midgar section. The pillar for Sector 7 just fell. So I'm very early still. It's a fun little game. I can't wait to really dive back into it because I've only played through the game really twice. That was when I was a kid, and I did the whole Gold Chocobo, Knights of the Round, all the Ultimate Weapons, the whole big spiel.
Your completionist
and then I played
run?
My completionist run, and then I played it with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're just hanging out and doing whatever. So this is me playing this, really looking into fun material combinations and stuff, and I can't wait to get into that kind of stuff. So it's going to be fun. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, there's some crazy ones. And the game, like, there are a couple of things that you can exploit, you know, fairly early on before, you know, you get to Disc 2 with, like, getting people's, like, higher limit breaks and just some power leveling and maxing out stats and that sort of thing. Well, maxing out stats you can't do until later on, but...
I mean, I'm just going to play through it normally. I'm not going to, like, exploit anything or stuff like that. So I'm just going to... doing the normal thing and everything. I forgot how messed up the game was, though. Like, story-wise, I just got through that area with, what's his name? You gotta go find Tifa. She's at that one
Don
Baron's Cornet. House.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, Don Cornero's house. That was a really messed up sequence. I'm watching this, like, how is this a kid's game? I don't understand. Like,
yeah,
this is really creepy. Like, this is messed up stuff.
Yeah, he's a big old creep. And, you know, in Final Fantasy VII, you know, OG version... he's not treated with any sort of like respect. There's nothing redeemable about this guy. He's kind of a joke. But they do treat the sort of scenario that they're in about like this sort of a very rapey situation with a certain amount of levity. We're like, none of this is okay. Like, it's how often does this sort of thing happen in this world? It doesn't seem like this is the first time. Somebody's got to do something about this guy.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm worried about that part when I get to the remake. I don't know what they've done to the extent.
Well, a lot of that stuff from what I've been seeing is relatively intact. Like the hit, like the same story beats. It seems like a lot of the changes, like in the form of additional content, where like they stretch out segments or like add stuff. To like different like dungeons and stuff, I guess is for lack of a better word, like when you're inside Mako reactors.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I'm excited to get to that remake because Final Fantasy VII is a great game. Like,
yeah,
and it's funny because all they really had to do, in my opinion, was update the graphics and just send it out there. But they put they put a lot of effort into it, so good for them.
Yeah, this is a whole different thing. This is nuts to the extent that they went through.
I'm interested to see how they, you know, have they have like that switchable battle system. Like you can switch it between like more of a turn-based and more of an action-based battle system. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh gosh, what was the game I was thinking of that was like that?
Earthworm Jim.
No. I'd say I'm going to get like in 20 minutes where I'm going to be like, oh my god, it was that game.
It was No More Heroes 2.
Yeah, it was that one. Yeah, where you just pause in between and then said different commands and stuff. Because you could toggle between the characters. It still is first-person control.
Oh, interesting.
Well, not first-person. Yeah. You're controlling one person in battle, but you can kind of pause combat and... Oh, it makes me think of Dragon Age. It makes me think of Dragon Age. Where Dragon Age has a mechanic where you can pause combat and then toggle through your list of characters and give them initial commands. So that would be the next thing you do. You even can, like... Solus, you can aim his shield to this area and then toggle to the next character and tell them to do this. And so it makes me think of that. And then you just go right back to the combat in real time.
Right.
So you can play through it like that, or you could just smack them in the face with your big sword.
No, when I get around to it, I'll probably try both systems, see what works better for me.
Well, it's not really... It's not really one or the other. I mean, you can mix it up in combat. You don't have to use one or the other button. That was the way that Dragon Age was. There was literally just I'm using that comparison because I played that. But literally on the PlayStation, the middle button, the middle of the controller is a big button. You just tap that and it pauses the combat and then you do your commands. And then you tap it again and then it's back to real time. So mid-combat, you could toggle between the two. So... You can go mash. Oop, now I gotta get a little bit more planny, and then you can just pause combat and map it out. That's what it seems like to me.
Okay. Well.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that game too, if I can get my hands on it.
Yeah, it looks like it's gonna be really good. I've been playing more Animal Crossing. More of the same there. Nothing new to report on that one. I've been playing... Oh, I downloaded Picross 2, which is a puzzle game.
Real quick on Animal Crossing, before we slip away from that, what is this I hear about turnips? Because I hear about this stock market with these turnips.
It's not really something that I engage in. What you can do is on Monday morning, or really any time throughout the week... turnips will go on sale. You can go to your general store and buy turnips. They'll sell them to you for a certain price. And what you're doing is you are gambling that at some point during the week, you will be able to sell them back for a higher price, either at your store or if your friend. It'll differ from player to player what the price is going to be at any given time. So you check back in the afternoon, you check back in the evening, you check back the next day to see if you can sell them for a higher price. Sometimes you'll be able to, sometimes you won't. I've seen turnips like as low as like 40 of the in-game currency, 40 bells. And then I've seen them as high, not personally on my island, but I've seen people report them as high as like 500. So if you buy a ton at a really low price and then sell them, you can make a lot of money. I haven't really engaged with this because money's not really an issue, because I'm not trying to like power my way through this game. I'll play for like 45 minutes a day on average, do a couple things, make some money, maybe tinker with the design of my island, and then like pass the control off to Des, and she'll play for 2 hours. So
after she gets done house homeschooling those children.
Well, it kind of like turns into like a tag team sort of thing. I'll be playing Animal Crossing while one of them's doing schoolwork. Usually Mika is who I'm taking care of, and Mika is a little bit more independent with her work than Ripley is. So when Des needs a break from Ripley, pass off the Animal Crossing controller, she'll sit there with Mika, and then I'll go with Ripley for a little bit, or Ripley will take a break. And that's kind of like how the mornings go. It's schoolwork and Animal Crossing.
Oh, God.
But like, a couple of buddies on the Discord group, kind of like pass around like what price, where their turnip prices are. And like if you see like a friend of yours has higher turnip prices, like they can open their gates, you can visit their island and sell off your turnips and make a bunch of money. I don't know. Like
my coworker was telling me about this, and he's like, "Yeah, I got about 5 million bells right now." I'm like, "Holy crud."
I mean, that's cool. There's not a ton you can do with money unless you're really into collecting like every piece of furniture or every little knickknack that goes on sale in the store. Like the general store will basically have, like at this point in the game, I don't know if it expands, but at the point I'm at in the game, the general store has like 4 items that you can buy, that you can only buy one of, and then the next day they all change out. So if you're really into collecting everything, then having a lot of cash on hand is useful. But I'll pop into the store, and most days I'll look at it and be like, I don't want any of this, and I'll leave.
Yeah, that's how I would be, because I mean, what are you gonna do with all that stuff?
Right, and like there's a clothing store as well. Like, if you want to collect every piece of clothing, then okay, you got all the money you can, or you're ever gonna need to do that. But no, I don't.
I just find it funny that this is a thing that's called stock market. STOCK.
Do you mean stock like STL?
Oh, STALK. Stock is
like O-C-K.
I'm dumb. I need to go back to school. Can I homeschool with you guys?
Sure. I feel like there should be like another spelling for stock, as like if you're being stalked by someone like a killer or like a hunter or something. Because I don't know. Like basically like 3 meanings for the word and 2 different spellings. I don't know.
It is English.
Yeah. So. Nothing really to say about Picross. It's a cool little puzzle game. I play like 3 or 4 puzzles that usually turns into 7 or 8 because they're really quick to burn through. What was the other game that I'm playing right? Oh, Mega Man 03.
Oh.
Which is in that Mega Man Zero collection. And
I love those Mega Mans.
Yeah, you know, I'm liking 3 more than 1 and 2 I thought were pretty good games. 3 I'm liking because it has a bit more of a finely tuned or refined economy system to it. Because, you know, like in a Mega Man X, you find upgrades to your health, you find upgrades to your suit that gives you different abilities. In the Mega Man Zero games, the principle is the same, except there are different like layers to how you actually unlock these things. You have to find the upgrade in a level. You have to use your in-game currency to unlock the upgrade, and then you have to go through a menu system to apply the upgrade.
Dang.
And sometimes you have to go through 2 rounds of paying into an upgrade in order to unlock it, just to give yourself like +8 to your HP. Mega Man 03 refines a little bit more, so there are fewer steps that you have to take in order to get these things, but it's still like, hey, find the thing and then hope you have enough money to unlock it. Now, in Mega Man 0, 1, and 2, sometimes like it takes just a fuck ton of cash to actually unlock it. In 3 so far, it just seems like it's a couple hundred. Most of the time, you'll find enough money in a given stage to unlock an upgrade that you find there. So that's better, at least. But yeah. There's a game I beat recently. Oh, I played through Super Metroid. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, weren't you guys talking about that? No, I saw it on the Discord channel. You guys were talking about people who would play Samus in a Metroid movie. Was that what the discussion was, or did I misunderstand that?
Oh yeah, somebody brought up a question like, oh, what Nintendo franchise should be a movie, or like what video game?
Oh, that was the question. I was looking for the question. I just saw like Sigourney Weaver and Metroid in the same line. I was like, oh, that'd be.
Yeah, it was something about like what video game franchise should become a movie next, and my immediate response is to none. None of them should be a movie. No more video game movies. Stop it. But like a bunch of people,
the majority of them, 98% of them, are absolute garbage. Which one did I like? There was one that I enjoyed.
Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, I did enjoy Detective Pikachu.
But that one, it's not like it's based on a game, but it's so different from the actual game. Like they just like took.
That's how it needs to be done.
They just like took the concept. What if Pikachu was a detective, and they just made a movie? Like they made a detective movie that just happened to have Pokemon in it.
That's how they need to do this with all of them.
Well,
there's another one. I'm googling this because I this is gonna drive me crazy. But go on.
But, you know, you make, like, a fucking, like, God of War movie, and it can't, like, follow the same structure as a video game. Video games are made to be long, whereas movies, you better be done in about 2 hours. And, you make it, like, one out of, like, Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess, and you're not able to hit all of the same beats. You just don't, there's not enough screen time, and if you try, it's going to be way too rushed. Like, I don't know, my whole stance is let video games be video games and let movies be movies. I don't know why we're continually trying to mash the two together. They're very different things.
Yeah, I'm not really saying. Warcraft was okay. That was all right.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You'd be like, eh, with that one. They have the Sonic movie. I haven't seen that. I actually kind of do want to see it just because of Jim Carrey. Just see Jim Carrey be Jim Carrey for a couple of hours. They did a Rampage movie.
Oh, yeah, that was with The Rock.
Yeah, that looked want to see that. That looked pretty stupid. I don't know why. It does, but I loved Rampage way back in the day. So I'll be watching it for nostalgia reason and be like, look what they've done to it.
The only movie I want to see right now is New Mutants, but we never will.
Nope. Never. That's it.
Yeah, we're never going to see that movie, and it's sad.
Speaking of movies that I did not enjoy.
Go on.
And I feel like it's kind of controversial that I did not enjoy it, but I, on the flight back from Belgium.
Right.
I sat through The Joker.
Oh, you didn't like Joker.
I didn't like Joker. I mean, it felt like it just took a long time to get to certain points, and the end really wasn't that big of a payoff. You're like, all right, then, okay.
Yeah,
it was just a psychological thing, and like, spoiler alert on this comment, but the whole, that girl wasn't actually his girlfriend, I'm like, yeah, that was kind of obvious.
I don't think they were fooling anyone with that one. Because, God,
no.
I think I saw that movie with Hector. And when we saw it, I like kept on leaning over, like, no, something's not right here. No, I bet you she's not real.
I mean, I know we're not supposed to like him because it's the Joker, but I mean, there has to be something about the character that makes me, like, I connect with them, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, there was something like very pathetic about him.
Yeah,
but like
it just
every time something bad happens to him, like you're almost like rooting for him to become the villain that you know he's going to become, because
yes,
you're like waiting for them. I'm like, okay, is this where it finally happens and we finally get some catharsis here? Do we finally get like that emotional release of like you have now been broken and it's time for you to go insane?
Yeah, and the Joker's, like, intelligence insane. This guy was just insane. Mm. Like, it was just a difference between the typical Joker that we would see in the comics and the movies up until this point. Because that Joker is insane, but he justifies it in a way that we actually could understand his train of thought. I know, this is really tough. I don't understand this kind of crap. But this guy was just like, yeah, this guy's just a nutter. I don't just a nutball. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I can understand, it's hard to get behind a movie, like, to have something to root for if what you're rooting for is him to become a ruined person. So, it's understandable. I really liked it, but, you know.
I mean, I think it would have been fine if it was just a psychological movie and not the Joker.
It is interesting, because when me and Ryan talked about this movie, I think you were in Belgium at the time. I don't know, maybe you weren't. Maybe you're still here for that. But when I saw this movie, we talked about how like, it's interesting that this is a comic book movie, because it doesn't need to be the Joker, but I don't know that audiences would have gone along with this journey, this character, unless it was like the Joker or some character of that stature, because you don't, like, would you watch a movie about someone going insane like this if you didn't already know the destination? Like, this is such a harsh journey. If you don't know where it's going, it's like emotionally torturing yourself.
Yes, and I think that's a fact that goes against it.
Okay.
Because it's a movie that relies on the fact that he's the Joker in order to be watchable. So if you were to take this exact same movie and just not the Joker, it's completely not watchable because it's just too emotionally taxing. I think that's a fact that goes against it.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just not a fan of it.
Well, fair enough. Speaking of comic books.
Oh, here we go. I haven't had one of these in a while.
It's an X-Men.
Oh, it's an X-Men.
Yeah, this is
Where are you in this anyways? Are you all caught up?
No, not yet. But this, the trade paperback I just showed you is the newest iteration of the X-Men. This is stuff that's current. There's a trade paperback for current X-Men stuff, which I've been keeping up with. But to answer your question, I am in 2002.
Oh, I thought you'd been further than that by now.
Well, I work through about 1 month and 1 week is how I kind of have it planned out now. So, while I could be moving faster, there's a lot of stuff. Like, once you get into like 2003, 2004, there's a lot of stuff that splinters off. So, in 2001, there's a contraction, and it gets down to like 5 books as opposed to like the 7 or 8 different books that were ongoing. So the one shots and spinoffs and stuff that were happening. So it contracts a bit and then it's going to expand again. So I kind of like pace it out so I'm not like scrambling to try to keep up with fucking comic books from 15 years ago, 20 years ago even. But the newest stuff, the current stuff, some of my books got delayed. Amazon doesn't know when they're going to be delivering them, which
Amazon is prioritizing things that people need right now opposed to
outrageous. I mean, send me my books.
It took like 13 days or so, no longer than that, like maybe almost 20 days, and I'm finally gonna get my teapot on Saturday. So
send me my books, I want them. But you know what, I'm not really, I'm of course joking, I'm not really all that upset about them like having delayed shipments for these books. My biggest concern right now is they don't know the estimated delivery date for the Xenoblade remake that I ordered.
Oh, no.
And no, it better be on release day, motherfuckers.
Oh, no.
Do not take this away.
When's that release?
May 29th.
Okay, so it's a whole month away.
Yeah. So they got time to keep their shit together. Make sure this happens. I don't pay for Prime for nothing.
Oh, maybe it's time for a digital download.
I don't want a digital download.
It's fine. Just buy the empty box. You're fine. just get the empty box later.
I did finally put in. I bought a bigger micro SD card for my Switch a few months back, and I finally got around to switching it over. And it was like I'd go through the process of like archiving all my software, putting in the new card, re-downloading the ones that I wanted. And I wasn't sure if it... I wasn't 100% sure if it worked this way when I did it, so I was kind of taking a risk here. But all of your saves do get maintained if you archive. Like, all your digital game saves will be safe if you archive your software and re-download. So I didn't re-download everything. So, you know, in the absolute, like, worst doomsday scenario, I could download Xenoblade, but I don't want to. Like, are you going to download Final Fantasy VII?
No. No, and that's why I'm not playing it, because I want that for my bookshelf. I want it right there with all my other PS4 games.
A little bit of news, like, we don't talk about this sort of thing very often, but there's a bit of news today where Animal Crossing has become the highest-selling digital game. Like, it sold the most digital copies of a game of any game ever. It's Animal Crossing. You want to take a guess how many digital copies it sold to become the highest selling digital game?
Well, there's one thing Corona did. It boosted Nintendo's profits.
Yeah, they're taking that money all the way to the bank.
Oh my gosh.
So take a guess. How many copies did they sell to become the highest selling digital game ever?
Oh my god, that's so tough. I mean, what are other really big digital sales? That's tough with digital sales.
I'll tell you number two is a Call of Duty game.
Ooh. Oh, is it Warfare?
I don't remember.
No, that's a new one. That can't be. And that's a free download. I don't think that counts. I don't know. Gosh, how many? I got 5 mil. I have no idea.
Jeez, you got it right on the nose on your first
guess. Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm the best.
5 million digital copies, and it is also... It's the highest... Actually, it might be the second highest debut for a Switch game. I think it's only behind Smash for most sales in like the first week or something.
Yeah, it's... Right now, everybody's snatching up Switches and Switch Lights mm-hmm. and Animal Crossing. Every day I get 5 people asking about... No, more than that. Asking about Animal Crossing and or Switches. The way I pick up the phone now in electronics and Target, for those of you listening and don't know, I work at Target. It's now Target Electronics. We are out of Switches and Animal Crossing. This is Wes. How can I help you? Like, that's how I pick up the phone. Now.
That's funny. I used to do the same thing when I work at Blockbuster because I'm old. Because Blockbuster was always open holidays, so we'd get like phone calls on like Thanksgiving and Christmas, and the first thing that people would ask is like, "Are you open?" And I picked up the phone, didn't I? And the second question was like, "How long are you open?" So like after like an hour of that, I would just pick up the phone. It's like Blockbuster Video open till midnight.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah, just people were going nuts about this because everybody's quarantine. It's so funny. Like everybody's like, it's 8 o'clock, and people are walking in and go, "Do you have any Switches in the back?" Like, no, it's 8 o'clock at night. Last time we got Switches in, we sold 6 of them. We opened at 8 and were sold out at 8:15. I mean, I don't know what part of this you're not getting. Like, people are snatching these things up right now. We got 3 or 4 boxes full of Switch Lights, and there's, I think, 6 of them in a box. Essentially, we sold almost 30 Switch Lights in half a day. Hmm. We just burned through them all. I mean, people are snatching these things up. And it's madness, and people are not wrapping their head around, like, why don't you have laptops and Switches? But, like, because nobody can leave the house. Like, what's confusing about this?
Yeah, it's not like you guys make them, you know? Take your complaints to Nintendo. Let them know you want them.
It's 8 o'clock at night, and you're asking me now? What are you... Come on.
Where have you been for the last 12 hours?
People are showing up before we opened to get in line for these things. It's madness.
Really?
Yeah. It's madness.
That is crazy. So here's a question.
Okay.
Before we get to X-Men, do you?
Oh
think
yeah, we were talking about X-Men. Holy crap!
Do you think that this run on Switches and Switch Lights makes it more or less likely that they do another model at some point during the Switch's life cycle?
I don't know. That I don't want to say less likely, but I don't want to say more likely. I think it's about the same, really, because hopefully Nintendo's smart enough to go, we're profiting because of this virus and people can't go outside and they need things to do and keep the kids entertained. And not going, oh, look how popular we suddenly are. We need to make different kinds and sell more. Like, I don't know how that's going to go.
I think it's likely that we'll see, like, different colors or special editions. But, like, the Switch Pro that, you know, people will never shut up about.
I don't think
this impacts like the likelihood of a Switch Pro at all. I don't think they're gonna do one.
It probably makes it less, because I mean everybody's got a Switch now. I mean, I just
and you know, momentum counts for something. Like they're not able to meet demand entirely at this point. So there is going to be like an after effect of this. Like even when, you know, people are able to like leave their homes and get back to work and get back to some sort of semblance of a normal life, there's still going to be like unsettled demand. So, you know, if somebody wanted one and wasn't able to get one, if they just kind of see one in the wild, it makes it more likely that just kind of pick one up on an impulse. Like, hey, I wanted these. I might as well just get one now that I can.
Yeah.
So I think you do see, like, an after effect.
Not in, like, new styles and, like, the pro or anything. I don't think it's going to make it more likely for something like that. But, yeah, I'm sure they'll... I don't know.
I kind of think... I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm not involved in any sort of marketing or anything. But in my humble opinion, I think it makes it less likely that they do one because they don't have to. And if they continue to sell these things at a high rate, and that continues for a while, they can just kind of look at it like, well, no, let's not devote resources to upgrading this. Let's just devote resources to whatever our next system is going to be.
Unless they burn resources to do the pro. As a way to sell a more expensive console. I mean, the demand's so high for the Switch right now still. Might as well optimize on this while people can't get the Switch. Might as well, people are settling for the Switch Pro. We had a lady do that earlier today with the PlayStation 4. We didn't have any regular ones. We had a Pro. She ended up buying a Pro.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
It could be something like that.
Could be.
I don't know.
But, you know, there's also, like... You have to think about, like, Nintendo is a smaller company when you compare them to Sony or Microsoft. And it does take a while to, like, get the infrastructure in place to not only maintain your current supply for your hardware, like, just keeping your factories running, because they don't manufacture these things themselves, they don't 3D print them, but then, like, adding another SKU into there, you're adding a Pro model into that, you know, they might... end up cutting back on things like the classic model or the light. And if there's still demand for those two, they're less likely to cut back on that supply. I would assume. I don't know. I'm not an economist. So, I don't know. They're not the sort of company that's big enough to be able to maintain all of them. Like when they came out with the new models for 3DS, the new 3DS and new 3DS XL, like the classic model of 3DS kind of got phased out, so you were left with new 3DS
and
2DS.
They would be doing something like that.
So no, I don't see a Pro coming along without something being phased out, and if demand is still super high for what they currently have,
that makes a lot of sense.
I don't see why.
Yeah.
I don't think. I don't know. We'll see. Then we'll know. No one can really predict what Nintendo does because, for all we know, they come out with the cardboard Switch.
Oh, and the Ring Fit being gone.
Oh, I know. I was texting you about that earlier today.
Yeah, I just
let me know as soon as you get one, because like those are going for crazy prices on like secondhand sites like Amazon and eBay and shit.
It's crazy. I thought I had them, but when I got to work, I'm like, oh, those boxes I remember saying they were just Labos. I thought they were rings. Because it's just so weird, like, some of the things that would sit in my store for months and nobody would touch are suddenly, like, nobody can get their hands on it. Like, I couldn't sell a ring to save a life. Like, that was it. They'd be like, oh, I had to buy this or this person dies. Oh, sorry for you, bud. And, I mean, it was, and now, like, we just simply don't have any. I didn't even realize that we're missing.
Yeah, it's weird because it doesn't seem like there is any, like, sort of extra big marketing push for, like, it just seems like a word of mouth thing. Like, now people can't work out like in a gym,
might as well
so
have this,
like,
ring.
Hey, here's this thing for Switch, but like it seems to be like no effort on Nintendo's part to get word out there. It's just everyone talking to each other, you know, over the internet, over Skype or Zoom and whatever, and like it was just guerrilla marketing.
Did you want it for Dez? Does Dez want it?
I don't know if Dez knows what it is. Like, I think she'd probably get into it if she saw what it was. But it was mostly also for me and also the children, because, you know, I'll go out for a run every day, but like, when we'll take them for walks or let them go on a bike ride around their neighborhood. But other than that, they don't get any sort of activity.
You go running every day?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What is this
hour.
Random... You just do random health things that I don't, like, know. Just, like, here's me making a salad with every meal, and then I go running every day. Like, I don't expect this from you. I don't know why. It just throws me off.
I also crush up cigarettes and spread them over my ice cream, so.
Do you have like a hand crank like thing on your mattress so you can do sit-ups like Leon in The Professional? Oh,
that's a great idea.
Oh man, that's something I need the girls into. I mean, the girls need to be active. They need a
true. True. Otherwise, they're just kind of obnoxious. I just want them to be tired all the time. They're quiet when they're tired. All right, but X-Men.
X-Men, yes. Let's actually get to X-Men now that I broke us off on that massive tangent.
So the most interesting thing to me about this current run of X-Men is that it's not quite telling a confined story just yet. Usually when you get like these trade paperbacks, it's about six issues and it's telling one story that gets bookended and then they move on to a new storyline.
Hey, here's House of M, no more mutants, snap.
Exactly like that. And then you like the next time there'll be a trade paperback or the next set of issues will tell a story that, you know, some will sometimes build off of that. You know, there's still continuity, but there'll be like a new villain, a different conflict. There's another like self-contained story that happens. And this isn't the way X-Men comics in particular used to be. You know, back when you get back in the 70s and the 80s and even into the 90s, you had storylines that stretched on for longer, and they were set up for stories that, you know, will happen, you know, a year later, you know, 12 issues before. So
they would think it would be the other way around. They want to do like quick episodes, like a TV show almost. You did get
like one shots, like little like one issue storylines occasionally, and that was especially prevalent in X-Men comics in the 60s when like Stan Lee was actually writing these things. Because it was much more like a villain of the week. Sometimes like you had a cliffhanger and it would get wrapped up in the next issue. You know, okay, who's the monster we're fighting this time? Mm-hmm. But then once you get into the 70s, and especially when Chris Claremont becomes the primary writer for the series, it's much more long form. He's going to tell you a story that's going to take like a year to fully come to fruition. And like always having to like move around his chess pieces, like moving different characters to different places because he's going to need them there, you know, a year and a half in the future. So it makes it really interesting. And what ends up happening is once you get into like the late 90s and the 2000s, you know, when the comic book industry crashes, you start to see the popularity of like the trade paperbacks, like the six issue collections. Those are starting to rise up in popularity. So writers start tuning their stories more to that so that you can have something that's confined to a more marketable six issue trade paperback rather than like trying to tell people to they're having to buy these individual issues.
Yeah.
And I don't know how like the sales of these like comics all work out. I have heard that if some like a comic book, like an individual issue sells 100,000 copies, that's really good. Whereas, you know, these things used to sell a lot more than that. So the industry never really fully recovered from when it crashed. But I'd be interested to see, like, the sale of trade paperbacks as opposed to individual issues. But I'm not really too familiar with any of that stuff. I just buy them in the trades because they're just more convenient to keep on a shelf.
Oh, yeah, you had to get tubs and then you had to, like, do a whole big thing. It'd be a pain if you buy individual comics.
Yeah, I'm not interested in doing any
of
that.
Plus, that would be like more expensive in the long run, wouldn't it? They're like $4 an issue or something like that.
I'm not sure. Yeah, something within that ballpark. And I usually pay about 12 to 15.
Yeah, and for you get the, like trades. I mean, yeah, you're getting like just the highlights. You're not getting the full scope of it all. But
well, in all of the trades that I've been getting, it actually is complete issues.
Really?
And I usually like. It's harder to track down, but all of the modern stuff, it will be like, okay, so here's issue 1 to 6, and the next trade paperback is issue 7 to 12, so you don't miss anything.
Hmm.
When you reach back, like, further into, like, early 90s, late 80s, and anything before that, it becomes harder to track down, like, the gaps, because sometimes you'll have, like, a collection that is, like, Days of Future Past, and, like, the next collection that will be was just like some like issues that were out like a year later, and it's hard to find that stuff that's in the middle.
Mm. But yeah, I have House of M and I have Civil War. And you can definitely tell reading through, like, all right, there's some points missing here and there. Like, they're just kind of jumping at things.
And sometimes with, like, those big company-wide events, that's because you have, like, the story, like, House of M, the storyline, but then all of the other X-Men and other,
oh,
like,
yeah, you have the X-Men and the Avenger stuff and the, yeah, yeah.
Yet their own ongoing series will tie into that.
Yeah,
and that's especially prevalent in, like, in Civil War,
oh, yeah,
or in Avengers versus X-Men, where you have, like, all of the Avengers books and all the X-Men books, and then you have, like, AVX, the miniseries that supplements all of that. So you really do have to keep an eye out, like, and if you want to get, like, complete collections, you really do have to, like, track down, okay, this collection has this issue to this issue, and then this one has the next ones.
But so you have, like, to go back and forth between, like, three books.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much what I've been doing. Now that I'm in the 2000s, it's easier to track down those paperbacks for those storylines. So I've been picking up, the one that I have, I already had New X-Men, which is a continuation of the X-Men storyline that started in 1991. And then I've been buying the paperbacks for Uncanny X-Men, which is the original run that's still going, and then Extreme X-Men, which is, like, the third flagship X-Men series that started up in the early 2000s. So those, I've actually been buying the books and, like, of course, flipping back and forth, because they don't really intertwine, but they do reference each other from time to time. Like, okay, well, because Xavier did this, and, like, well, when did he do that? He did it in a different series.
Mm. But which one do you have now? What's your new one?
This one is just titled X-Men. It is one of, like, six or seven ongoing X-Men books. And I bring up the trade paperbacks because it's interesting, because this one, it's not, like, a complete, like, bookended storyline. It's a lot of smaller stories and setup. And it's going to be interesting to see how long this author, Jonathan Hickman, keeps writing X-Men books, because he's doing a lot of setup. And sometimes what will happen is an author sets up a lot of stuff, but then, like, they're going to move on to a different author, so he's got to wrap up things really quickly. And I hope it doesn't happen with this, because there's some interesting things going on with, like, Mr. Sinister. I think that, like, and Magneto and Xavier are being great big creeps. There's some sort of turn happening. There's got to be some sort of twist. Oh, there's a new group of evil villains.
Oh,
they
boy.
They are elderly women who are also horticulture enthusiasts.
Oh, so it's the Golden Girls.
Yeah, and they're using the power of plants to try to reduce the human population.
Which one's Betty White?
I don't have their names in front of me, but there is a Betty White.
Well, there is a Betty White.
Yes, of course there is.
I'm surprised she's still kicking.
Yeah? She's never going to die.
Oh, never. I made the joke with my coworkers earlier. She was going to outlive us all, but that's only because Corona's going to kill us all in a week.
Yeah, it won't get Betty White. It'll try, and then it'll be like, I can't.
I just can't. She's too lovable. I mean,
yeah. So then the other interesting thing that's happening is, I think the most interesting thing to me is that there was an issue, and they haven't wrapped up this storyline, of course, because there's only been the one issue in here, where they send three mutants into this, like, Sentinel vault, but in order to, like, produce these, like, super high-tech Sentinels, like, time moves differently inside the vault. It's accelerated. So they have to send in these three mutants because they have, like, the capacity to survive actually entering these things, but they have to send them in because they also might have the actual longevity to, like, put them in there, and then, like, when they come out, they'll still be okay. So they send in X-23, Wolverine.
Okay.
Because of, like, her healing. And then they send in Darwin because of his adaptability.
He's still a thing. Okay.
Well, yeah, he got resurrected because everyone got resurrected. And they sent in Sync, And Sync is from Generation X, and he got killed off back in, you know, the late 90s.
And he's a plumber, and he's Italian, and he has he wears overalls.
Ah, yeah. And he wears overalls all the time? That'd be perfect.
Ah.
But no, Sync as a S-Y-N-C.
Oh, okay.
Like a sync cable. But his power is that he basically mimics the powers of other mutants. So he can mimics the powers of both Darwin and X-23, so that he's kind of like the backup to both of them.
How's that different from Hope?
It's not really.
Sounds a lot the same, except Hope is like supposedly a stronger version of that. I don't know.
Yeah, Hope. I'm not sure what the limits of Sync's powers are. It's not really explored all that much. He kind of in Generation X, where he was introduced, he kind of becomes a side character. He doesn't really get to do a whole lot.
Yeah, but yet they make an entire story arc around someone who has the same power.
Right. It's interesting. Well, they couldn't send Hope. I was going to say it's interesting that they chose Sync and not Hope. They couldn't send Hope because Hope is part of the basically mutant resurrection machine that keeps anyone from dying. So they couldn't send her. Otherwise, you know, if someone dies, they can't bring them back. And so they needed someone else to do it. Sync is alive again. Like, okay, we'll send him. Hope is more powerful, and Hope can also help stabilize the powers of other mutants. So if like Rogue's powers are out of control, like, and then this did happen when Hope was an infant, which her powers shouldn't have manifested by then, but whatever. Rogue's powers are out of control, and just like being in close proximity with Hope helps stabilize them. So they send them in, and you don't see them come out. They just get sent in, and after they get sent in, like the next frame or the next page is Cyclops saying, like, how long has it been? And like they've done a time skip forward in the storyline. Like the person who responds, like, it's been 3 months, 5 days, so and so hours, and he's like, okay, how long for them? And the person responds, like, roughly about 500 years. Like, holy shit. Oh god. So it's going to be, I'm really excited to see like what they do. Like, do they show those characters in there? How do they explain what happens to them?
I mean, are they out yet?
No, they never show them coming out. That's the thing. That's the thing about this trade paperback, is they set up these storylines and don't complete them. So I'm going to have to look at when the next one's coming out so I get the conclusions of these things. Or at least more development of them. And then the other thing that was really interesting is there was a character in the 70s and 80s called Destiny, and she got killed off. She's precognitive. She sees the future.
Yeah, I remember Destiny.
Yeah, and she was romantically involved with Mystique. It turns out they were married, which, of course, they could not address in the 70s and the 80s and even the 90s. That was still something that they didn't allow to happen in comic books. So with every mutant being resurrected, she is the one that they have not resurrected yet. And I have my own suspicions as to why, because I don't think Xavier and Magneto are on the up and up here. I think that both of them are just kind of shitbags and they need to go. But and like her precognitive powers would just kind of clue everyone in to like, hey, like shit's going down here and we got to stop it. So Mystique is trying to get them to resurrect her, because of course she wants her wife resurrected, and like everyone else is fucking getting resurrected, why not her? And they keep on sending Mystique on these suicide missions, and of course they're resurrecting her afterwards after she gets killed, but like they keep on sending her, like, yeah, we're gonna resurrect her, this is gonna be after this one thing, yeah, but we need to finish this one thing, go do this for her, and then we're gonna bring her back. And they kind of like build this issue around this structure of like bookending with like Mystique talking with Destiny in the past, and at the end it reveals that the conversation concludes with, here's the thing that's going to happen: Xavier and Magneto are going to set up this mutant island. I'm not going to be there. You need to get them to bring me back, and if you can't, you need to burn the whole fucking place to the ground.
That's good stuff.
Like, oh shit.
Oh, that's good
Mystique's,
stuff.
Mystique's gonna fuck everybody up.
So, what is this resurrection machine that you keep mentioning?
Basically, it's a way that they brought every mutant back, and it's a way to just totally like nullify death. So what Xavier and Magneto and Mr. Sinister have been doing is basically making genetic copies of every mutant so they can clone them, when they can build them a new body, and then also psychic copies of every mutant. So then they do that like Xavier does it like every few days, so that like if you die, your psychic imprint can just be put back into your clone body, so it's as if like you're fine.
Yeah, but that person that you were is still dead.
Right. But your consciousness, it got resurrected in a clone body, so yeah, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine.
So they're taking that consciousness and literally putting... They're not making a separate copy. Like, this is what gets why my brain hurt with it. All right, it's fine.
No, they're not making a separate copy, because what they have to do in order to...
Oh, okay, so like, they're moving the hard drive from one computer to another.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there is a bit more complicated of a process, because there are five mutants that basically have to like build you. There's like an incubation process, and then you like have to accelerate the growth of the body so that it like matches the age that you were. I do have some questions about how they're handling this though, because like Cyclops got resurrected, like he got killed and then immediately resurrected. But he still can't control his power. But he can't control his power because of an injury he had in his original body when he was, you know, adolescent. So yeah. Why couldn't they just grow him a new body to where he could control his powers? Why isn't that a thing?
Because, yeah.
And like an Angel, Warren Worthington, was another one who got sent on a suicide mission and then they just resurrected. Is he resurrected? Because like, he had basically been able to switch back and forth between like human form and Archangel form. Can he still do that? Like, how do they resurrect him with like the Apocalypse influence? Like, what Apocalypse did to him? How do they like take his genetic code? Unless they like had a genetic sample from when he was.
Convenience, but that's.
Yeah, they had this magic resurrection machine, and I'm gonna go to a Comic-Con and push up my glasses and like actually explain yourself, Jonathan Hickman. But yeah, that's essentially, and Hope is part of that process, as is a mutant called Gold Balls, and Ava Bell, who kind of like...
Gold Balls?
He was a character invented in the, I think in like 2012, 2013, after Avengers versus X-Men. And basically, like...
How do you justify somebody being like, all right, my name's Gold Balls? How do you justify that in your writing?
I'm fairly certain he started out as this joke character, and it's actually kind of interesting that they're giving him a function now, because he didn't do anything before. But basically, he manifests golden spheres from his body. He can like change their size. He can like make them like bullets. He can make them giant boulders. But basically, he makes these things, and they become like the incubation stasis chambers for growing the new mutant bodies.
Oh God! All right.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
And it's really one of the least objectionable things about everything that's happening.
Oh. And yet that's the one thing that disturbs me the most.
Mm. But yeah, oh, and there's this thing with Apocalypse happening. Like, they're living on Krakoa, which is that living island that got, you know, introduced back in 1975. And this being, like, sometimes an ally, sometimes it's an enemy. It's a living island, so it's just kind of a wild card. But there was this other thing that happened where another island showed up, and they kind of like collided and merged, and like these two islands have some sort of a relationship, and Apocalypse is there on Krakoa living with everyone else, and this other character shows up who calls themselves a summoner. I'm not quite sure what that means, but he like has some sort of rapport with this summoner community and this other island, so that's something that's been set up, but not quite sure what's happening there.
This is wacky, dude.
Yeah, things have taken a turn.
Yeah,
and you know, at some point, like, the weirdness is going to have to be addressed and then set on a course correction, because like it's supposed to be a story about like civil rights activists.
Oh, and all right.
Here we are.
All right. Mm-hmm.
But at the very least, it's interesting.
All right.
But anyway, You got anything else, or should we close it out there?
I mean, we're an hour in, and it's like a mini slash after slash whatever, so yeah, it's a pretty good time to wrap it up. What's cool. Next on the agenda?
Next is going to be the official show.
Okay.
So we'll have some news and new releases to go through. And that'll be fun.
Do we play any of these new releases?
Yeah, I actually have ETA, the Hyperlight Drifter looking game. I have that one downloaded. I haven't started it yet. Trials of Mana is out in a couple days.
Yes, which I got a coworker of mine that won't shut up about it.
That's just the worst, isn't it?
I mean, it does look good. I have the demo downloaded. I'll at least play the demo before we discuss it.
I suggest, try not to pay too much attention to the narrative. It's silly. Eh. But I think they really did a good job of modernizing the combat. But yeah, we'll get into it. And then Streets of Rage 4 is actually out on the 30th. We got a release date for that one.
Oh, wow.
But we'll probably end up recording before that one's out. Okay. So I'll just save that one for a mini show. Yeah. I'm gonna see if I can convince Ryan to buy that Beatdown City, Revenge in Beatdown City or something like that. That little, it's like a little brawler, like an 8-bit style. I'm gonna see if I can convince him to.
Oh, like a river, like a River City Girls.
yeah, similar, except like more NES looking.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll have a bunch of stuff to go through.
All right. That'd be pretty good.
Till next time, everybody.
So long.